Hello and welcome to the Ori Spotlight Podcast. We're talking to leaders across the cell and gene therapy industry and telling you more about Ori's mission to manufacture brighter futures. I'm Jason Foster, the CEO of Ori Biotech, and I'll be the host for today's podcast. Hello and welcome to the Ori Spotlight Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Foster. In this episode, we're very lucky to welcome Vered Kaplan, who's a serial entrepreneur having started and exited several businesses in the life sciences and cell and gene therapy sector. Currently, Vered is the CEO of Orgenesis, which is a publicly listed company in the cell and gene therapy space, not only developing therapeutics, but also now providing services to the sector. And so it's a pleasure to welcome Vered. Thank you for joining us.
Jason, thank you so much for having me. I know we've been trying to schedule it and we both keep busy.
You're a busy lady and always on an airplane, it seems, somewhere. So it's great to have you. I think you said you were calling in from Northern Italy, which is sounds exciting. Hopefully you have better weather than I do in London today.
Well, it's getting better.
It's getting better. Would love to start with some of those highlights we just discussed in a bit more detail. You know, some of the things that have been happening most recently in your business, in Orgenesis, and your broader activities. But maybe we can start, if you don't mind, in kind of back at the beginning, of what kind of brought you into cell and gene therapy and how you got involved in some of the things that you're doing today.
Well, you know, it's always when we look at the things we do, it's always funny how we got there, right? I mean, how did we end up here, right? What's a nice girl like you doing in a place like this, right? and I always wonder a bit, right? How did all this happen? Well, you know, I grew up in my academic background is from Israel, you know, went to engineering school there, did all my engineering degrees in Israel, business degrees. And Israel is always a very vibrant kind of place, right? I mean, everybody's got an idea, it's like biotech Silicon Valley.
Right. I mean, entrepreneurship's in the DNA, it seems.
Exactly. So you're not invited to dinner if you don't have at least a startup, right?
Maybe if at least one.
Yeah. If you're a doctor, you're excused. So bringing these two things together makes it kind of biotech heaven. Wonderful entrepreneurs, wonderful science. You know, you've got the Weizmann Institute, you've got the Technion, wonderful clinicians, researchers working very closely with other countries. And it's really great that I had the opportunity to kind of begin my career there and work there. And what was really amazing always in my eyes is how innovative Israeli science is, right? So it's always like a few years ahead of anyone else. And so I'd had several biotech companies, right, that worked in several areas that actually worked a lot in medical devices, different sensors, recombinant stuff, IVIG, you know, blood-based products. And academically, I was always very interested in cell engineering. And kind of over 12 years ago, I had, you know, met these scientists, and Israel has been very much a pioneer in this area of cell and gene therapy with Professor Zelig Ishar, and a lot of innovation. And I'd seen some different technologies that were related to cell and gene therapy. And I just kind of finished off with another company and was planning on kind of relaxing.
Right. You're going to take it easy.
But maybe not. Taking the dogs to the beach, you know, investing in the kids, all the things you always promise you'll do. But you know, entrepreneurship is in the blood, right? You can't get rid of it. There's nothing more dangerous than an unoccupied entrepreneur. And I was looking at this and remember 12 years ago, even more, 13, it was like a very niche area. I mean, who knew about cell and gene therapy, right? Who even heard about cell and gene therapy? And I'd looked at this and people were talking about taking cells out of patients, reprogramming them, re-engineering them, putting them back in. Yep. That's
still sounds
amazing,
like science fiction a little bit.
Right? And yeah. You know, it's not a recombinant protein. It's not a blood product. It's something more sophisticated. And by the way, I also love science. I love biology. I love all the computer sciences. I love physics. I mean, anybody who knows me a bit knows I'm always really interested in everything scientific. And I was, you know, I was just fascinated. And I had studied kind of cell engineering, and I was very interested in it academically. I said, wow, how amazing. I mean, this is probably going to be a very niche area, maybe 5-10 products in the whole world. So interesting how to approach this with regulatory agencies. How do we get this? You know, I was kind of thinking, is this a therapy? Is this a product? How do you, and couldn't resist the challenge. Okay. Just, you know, and said, okay, so let's start kind of a little company. It can be my little side hobby here. I can, you know, look at cell and gene therapy and see what are the fun things we can do with this. And, you know, and so I did start this company and started working with all kinds of scientists and looking at licensing opportunities, and was very lucky to have some kind of industry investors come in and was talking to the regulators, and they were wonderful. They still are. I mean, I always so much appreciate the regulators in this space. They always really approach this with a very kind of, they want to learn, they want to help, they're flexible, they're really trying to solve the issue, right?
Yes.
And so off we went, raised the money, got the grants, everybody was happy. But when I got to the stage where I needed to start manufacturing and making these products, right, that's when kind of everything hit a wall. I could not find kind of a good solution for this. So ended up buying a little lab, MasterCell in Belgium. And seems everybody had the same issue I had. And also seems that, you know, it is the biggest issue in the industry. How do you make these products? And that's kind of why I'm here today, right?
Can you maybe help me so that that little side hobby, as you called it, with 13 or 14 years ago, is now our genesis, I think. And
yes,
would love to know the breadth. So obviously MasterCell was part of the business, but isn't any longer. Where are the lines drawn around the business today? What is it? Could give us a little bit more on what our genesis is doing, the focus of the business.
Our goal always has been from day one is really to get these products to market, right? That's what a biotech entrepreneur wants, right? He wants to get wonderful science out to patients, right? That's what gives us that kick, right? And when we realize that it's actually not a simple problem in this industry. So first of all, we did our best with MasterCell, and I think we did a good job, right? I mean, we developed like a contract development manufacturing organization that really gave a good solution. But as we were doing that, we continued along the years to work with many hospital researchers kind of on a partnership level, trying to co-develop, trying to bring to market therapies. And one of the things we realized along the years that not always the traditional centralized solution of, you know, taking a product, making it in one central solution is the answer for this industry. And, you know, you have a new industry, you need new tools for it. So what we developed is what we call our point of care platform. And I think we've based this on a lot of work we've done in product development. We've also based it on some of, you know, our experience in developing all the different industrial solutions, manufacturing solutions for these products. And what we have today and the way we work is that we have what we call our point of care centers. They're more like hubs, okay? And they are centers which around them we really focus our activity. And that means maintaining a very high quality assurance system, right? That means having all the process development capabilities. That means training people, incoming supplies. And we try to have a hub like this. For instance, we have one in Belgium, one in Spain, Italy, Greece, Israel, Boston, and we Northern California, Baltimore. And we try to place these hubs in places where there's a lot of academic research going on, a lot of hospitals that treat patients for cell and gene therapy. In other words, places where it's a lot, where a lot of clinical trials are done or products being dispensed to patients, right? We try to bring these hubs where they're centralized on one hand, but close enough to the different clinical sites that need products.
Right.
And as opposed to what we used to do in the past in a centralized manner, when we are dealing with a new therapy, with a new product, okay, when we want to form a solution, whether it's for our therapies or one of our partners' customer therapies, right, whether it's something that we're doing for internal research, but most of the time it's done for biotech companies that really want to get their products to market, right?
Yes.
So they partner with us. And what we do is we develop the process, but we also think about the long-term kind of industrial solution that is needed. And
yes,
when you study engineering, the first thing you learn is that if you want to make a product, you have to start thinking about it. You produce a product, you have to start thinking about it in the initial steps of the design. So what we do is we develop a lot of process development and work with companies, wonderful companies like OI, right, to fit in all kinds of solutions, technology solutions. So you have the biology combined with the engineering. And once we feel we have a good solution of the therapy and the automation or system around it that is able to produce it, we kind of look at this as one unit, and we place these units in our mobile production and development labs or processing labs, okay? We call them OMPULs or Genesis Mobile Production, the processing and development units. So, so these OMPULs, they're about container size. We can put them next to the center. We can put them next to the hospital. We can put them wherever needed. And their goal is actually to provide a very, very stable environment for these products. So today we have quite a few products under different stages, right, of being ampulized or even produced in an ampule. We work with wonderful companies that provide technology solutions that help us kind of form this combination. And we have about 10 hubs working with many clinical sites. And that's what we try. We try to really offer a point of care network, a solution both for the clinicians, biotech companies, patients, technology companies who want to bring their products to market. And that's our goal. Our goal is to make these products available, affordable, accessible.
So many interesting things in there. So many interesting things in there that I hope we can touch more on over the next kind of half an hour. But one of the things I love that you mentioned really is, you know, the way I translate that and when I talk about this issue is that, you know, yesterday's thinking is not going to solve today's problems. You know, it's sort of this idea of centralized manufacturing, flying patient cells all over the world and processing them and the costs and logistics associated with that. I think it's incredibly forward-thinking and innovative to say, well, how do we, not only the idea of distributed manufacturing or kind of localized manufacturing isn't new per se, people have been talking about it for a long time, but everyone that, most of the folks at least who grew up in the old world, all they can see is the problems associated with it. So it's, how are we going to batch release those problems? How can we ensure, you know, GMP? How do we get the right people? You know, thinking about quality systems. And I think, you know, the leveraging of what I hear you saying, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is the Orgenesis is not only expertise, the kind of the human expertise around process development and the understanding around the biology, but also leveraging technology, because it really takes both of those things. Without one or the other, we can't realize this vision. And I see you nodding, so I must be close, but I'd love to hear your and I love that you use the word ampulized. You've made up your own word, which is so descriptive. It tells us exactly what's happening. So, you know, as the kind of manifest themselves in these kind of localized, you know, self-contained units that can actually do the manufacturing, and then you bring your expertise and then your technology to bear. It sounds like, you know, we're getting to the point where it's not science fiction to think about being able to manufacture these products at scale closer to the patient.
Of course, it's not science fiction. It's a very practical reality. I mean, it's actually quite practical, right? It's not, You just have to work at it. It's nothing out of this world. It's just another way of thinking. And I think what brought about this way of thinking is a realization that maybe not be obvious, but you actually, if you really think about this deeply, we're not manufacturing cells, okay? I mean, you don't take little bits of biology or peptides or enzymes and stick them together. No, look, I've made a cell. It's not what we're doing.
Right.
What we're doing is programming cells, right? We're taking a cell, which is an extremely clever entity, right? It's think of it, every cell has, I mean, it's like a hologram, right? It knows everything about us in there, right? It's holding all our database, all packed away cleverly, not only in the genetic material, everything in a cell is a living unit, right? That knows everything about us. And it's also a computational system, right? That's what cells do. They get inputs, they put out outputs. They take data, information from the surrounding, process it, they have algorithms, and out comes what you need. It's a little computer, right? And it's like a, I don't know, one of these clever chips that knows how to do things. Yeah. So what we're doing actually, when we talk about cell and gene therapy, we're programming cells. And just as in software, hardware industry, things move. They change, right? Once we all ran with our little cardboard tickets to the main computer room, right? I even remember doing that. Very excited little girl going with her, you know, oh, look what I did today, mommy. I went to the computer room. And we don't do that anymore, do we? We've got our little computers in our hands on our table.
In our pockets, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're not there in cell and gene therapy, but it's coming.
We'll get there.
You won't get there. Yeah, I just saw these beautiful little kind of microfluid processors for reprogramming cells. So amazing, so exciting, right? And but for now, we have other solutions that we can use to utilize, you know, our capability to program cells. So more than thinking of ourselves as some kind of manufacturing expert, I think of ourselves as the guys who come in, lay down the hardware, working with hardware providers, making sure it's very standardized, always exactly the same, and building in the software so we can actually program, right? And we've got lots of free programming tools today. We have wonderful viruses, we have mRNA, we've got CRISPR, we've got so much stuff going on, right? So like the hardware software industry, the software gets easier to use, the hardware becomes more sophisticated, and that's why it's so important that biology and technology work together. This is the software and the hardware working together. You can't have one without the other, can you?
No, it doesn't work.
Yeah, and that's why some people kind of say we are almost like an open source biotech company, right? Because we license different technologies, work with different providers of biology, and we try to make it available on the hardware platforms.
Right, on the infrastructure. Interesting. You'd referenced, and I'd love for you to expand a bit on your sort of partnership approach, and you've I think, recently announced a partnership with Johns Hopkins, I believe, and other institutions around the country and the world. You referenced Italy, I think, Greece, Spain. Would love to know, sort of, you had said that Orgenesis obviously has a pipeline of its own therapeutic products that you're developing using your technology platform and also your know-how. So it's a therapy developer, but also provides services to partners around some of these same things using those technologies and that infrastructure. I'd love to understand the kind of two sides of that model, because it's a little bit unique. Usually therapy developers don't do the other side of the business potentially.
So the thing is, at the end of the day, we don't market our therapies usually ourselves. We find a marketing partner. So it ends up being very much the same, right? I mean, you can think
the activities are very similar. Yeah.
Yeah. So you can think of us, you know, we provide the software, and sometimes we also provide the apps.
Okay. Right. Fully integrated. Yeah.
Yeah. So we develop our own apps, or sometimes we just provide somebody else's apps.
Right.
Simple as that, okay. Right? Yeah. So that's kind of why I'm saying it's almost like, because, you know, you see companies and they really want to provide a therapy and maybe they don't have their own development. So we say, hey, look, okay, take this app, provide this therapy and we'll make it and provide it and make sure you've got it wherever you need it, right? And sometimes company says, oh, look, we've developed this wonderful therapy, but we don't know how to industrialize it and get it out there and distribute it. And we say, oh, okay, let's use our platform here. Let's get it in. Let's build up the right little box for it, ampulize it, and find a wonderful home next to the hospitals, right? So not sure there's that much of a difference. And on the other hand, right, those are hospitals. In Europe, you have hospital exemption. Many, you know, by the way, a lot of people are not aware of this, but if you look at the statistics of who's doing clinical trials, you will see that half, almost half, if you don't want to be, is done not by industry, not by biotech companies, but investigator-initiated trials, hospital exemption, hospitals. I've even heard of hospitals wanting their own BLA, right? So because it's such a unique space, so these kind of hospital networks or research institutes, it's very difficult for them to go out and build out their own clean rooms and work. And sometimes they don't want the legal liability. Sometimes they just don't have the know-how. Sometimes they don't have the resources or the time. Even those that do, wonderful places like Johns Hopkins, how much capacity can they build out? Not that much, right? So part of our partnership on the hospital side, right, is on the institute side, is to come in and be that provider for them, right? For their own researchers, for their own investigators, but also for anybody else who wants to do clinical trials there. And that's a wonderful partnership, right? Because at the end, there's three components to this business, right? You need the doctors. They're running the show. And this is a cell therapy. It's not just taking something off the shelf. They want to be close to the production units. They want to know the timelines. They don't want to send off somebody's blood and hope that in a month it comes back and they can treat a patient. They like that connectivity. They like that interaction. Mm. And I can tell you that logistically, trying to make all these products in one place, that's a logistic nightmare.
It is.
It's a lot of cost in terms and risk. And, you know, many of the products have to be frozen, takes away efficacy. So there's so many issues. I mean, if you try to imagine doing all the bone marrow transplantations in the U.S. in one location, it's almost impossible, right?
Yes.
And even, you know, we should learn from nature. I mean, nature has had time on its side, right? It's become incredibly efficient. It's had a lot of time to learn how to do things correctly.
Yes.
Nobody tries to expand cells, reprogram cells. I mean, you don't see mommy's taking the little babies, running off to a central location in Philadelphia to get new cells for it.
Reprogramming them.
Yeah, it's not efficient. It's not energy efficient. We're all little walking bioreactors. We all do our own cell processing, right? Why? Because that's the most energy efficient way to do it.
Yeah, very interesting. No, I agree. And at some point in the last couple of years that we've known each other, you had told me about kind of the ambition to have a much larger network. I mean, you're at the beginning phases of this. And where does that ambition lead you and the company? I mean, what's your vision for the future of this? How big could it be? How extensive could it be?
From what I read from industry kind of documentation, talking about a need of around 140,000 batches a year, okay? Mm-hmm. With industry supplying, having only about half, and this is just for clinical development. I mean, you want these products not to be fifth line of therapy. You want them to be first line of therapy. You want them very easily to get to patients. Our ampules, you know, well, you need another ampule. You pick up the phone, you order another ampule, right? To multiply your capacity is so easy, so quick. I mean, the nightmare of building more and more clean rooms, it takes you 2 years to build them.
Years.
And that's not in COVID when you can't get suppliers, okay?
Right.
And then it takes you a year and a half to train people properly, get it all regulated. Now, if you've got your basic unit, your basic production unit, this ampule, already fitted to a therapy, all these stacked little manufacturing boxes inside, right? And all sitting there churning away, you are very efficient in terms of processing power, right?
Yes.
You do parallel processing, not linear. Big step in computing, right?
Yeah.
And you can be very efficient at expanding capacity. One hub can have 5 ampules, 10 ampules, 100, 1,000. And it's not a matter of planning 3 years ahead, right? You need capacity in another location. Build another hub, take you 6 months. So that's what I'm saying. The level of expansion, I mean, we go as fast as we can using our, you know, any money we make, we expand because there's a lot of need for capacity. This year, we're putting a lot of focus on the US because we had more focus in Europe and Asia and Middle East. And we're really hoping to expand our capacity in the US. And I mean, for us, the more products, the more ampules we can get out. Here you see the scale, the effectiveness of scale, the cost effectiveness, because the overhead of the hubs becomes smaller and smaller, and we can just be lower and lower cost and more efficient.
And one of the things that doesn't really, I guess people don't really think about when they think about this challenge is the kind of infrastructure on demand, you know, the ability to have, you know, expansion relatively quickly in maybe 3 months or something, 6 months, but doing it in a de-risked way. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the biggest problems now, as you know, is when you're investing in a bricks and mortar facility, not only is it the 3 or 4 years of time it takes and the $50 or $100 million it takes, is that actually to run that facility and to operate it and to staff it, as you said, and just the costs associated with that are massive. And you don't know as a manufacturer, when am I going to need that much capacity? I have to put my finger in the air and say, okay, I'm going to build out capacity for 2,000 doses. I don't know. I'm going to pick a number. And then I might not need that much capacity for a very long time, or I might run out of capacity immediately. I don't have this. There's no ability to flex.
Yeah.
And what the model that you've just described, the brilliance of that is it's almost this de-risked investment model where you say, okay, we're at 70% of our capacity, we want to double capacity, we're going to order another unit or another 2 units or whatever. And maybe we don't want to place it here, we want to place it over there. And, you know, you can't do that with a bricks and mortar facility. When the diggers come out and the bricks go in the ground, you're stuck. And I think that's that kind of scalable, de-risked investment model has huge advantages.
It's also a people issue, you know?
It is, absolutely, yes.
Because first of all, the ampules are very people efficient. There's 2 technicians inside, another QC at the hub, because as we said, we try to integrate systems that are very efficient at manufacturing. But One of the things is if you kind of manufacture everything in one place, you've got to get so many people to that same location. It's almost impossible. We actually have what we call our Genesis Academy, got a master's degree now in Greece, which is great. And you know, you've got, and I we know this even from before, we were training so many young people coming out of academia because it's very difficult to find somebody who's trained because it's a new industry, right? So we were training more and more people. But to find 500 people in one location is impossible. Finding 10 people in different locations in the world, it's just not a big deal.
Right.
So it's also people efficient. And when I think one of the things that you bring up here in terms of investment, it's not only knowing how much capacity, but think science is changing so quickly, right? And the future change is always faster than the former change. I mean, that's one of the things. It's always accelerates. It's nodes of information being connected, and you're always going to get faster acceleration, right? So especially in this industry, right, it's changing so quickly, the science. You're not even sure you need the same type of technology inside. You want to upgrade it. You want to upgrade the software. I'm sure you, and I know you have that in your systems as well, right?
Yes.
You want to have continuous improvement and change. You want to be part of the evolutionary cycle of this industry, right? Because these are living drugs. They also have their own little evolution, right? And when you have so much flexibility, you can change the units inside the ampules, or you can move an ampule from here to there. It's just, you can change the class of the ampule as the systems become more closed, and you can learn from the ampules, which is, I think, is a very important issue, because you've got this capability to take data from all these units and, you know, find the most efficient ampules, efficient in treating patients, and really have that evolutionary cycle. How do I get my optimal, fittest ampule out there?
Right. Yeah. And what, how do we optimize them for various processes and various locations with, you know, various skill sets on board? All of that is adaptable and flexible, which is, those are massive words, I think, for our industry moving forward. I think, you know, a platform like Ori's has really fundamentally been designed exactly for this purpose. It's how do we be people efficient, space efficient, you know, digital first, allowing for that continuous learning. But I'd love to hear from your perspective of, you know, why is technology innovation so critical to the industry now? And we've talked a little bit about, you know, learning from history and yesterday's solutions don't necessarily apply to today's problems. But, you know, this is a whole new challenge that our industry is facing, where we have a circular supply chain, at least now in autologous products. We're starting with a patient's material. We're turning it into a therapeutic. We're delivering it back to that individual patient. That's new. That's not the way we operate for antibodies, as you know, or small molecules. And then as we look forward, how do we do it at scale? You know, now we unfortunately are severely constrained for lots of reasons. You know, cost of goods and costs are high, throughput's low, quality's highly variable. So we're only able to treat a very, very small proportion of the patients who could potentially benefit. But I wonder what your thought is on what's the role of technology moving forward to try and solve some of those issues, and how does that technological innovation or evolution look in your mind?
So, I mean, in my mind, that technology evolution, you know, is going to space. I mean, the things we envision are so wonderful for this industry, right? Because those of us who work in it can see how quickly it's developing.
Yes.
But take a system like Ori, right? If we want Ori system to really get to patients quickly, we need to work with little cells. We need to let it develop, right? And I've worked with many, many engineering groups, with many companies in different technologies. I love engineering. And, you know, engineers love to engineer. And at some point, you tell them, stop with this. Now we're going to use it, actually. Enough with the development. We've got to get this to patients, right? And, you know, it's the only way. You have to use it. And, okay, it's not perfect. It doesn't have to be perfect. Anything that exchanges what there is today is better. Okay. And if you have a closed system that you can actually operate, expand the cells, and we're working on several products, and especially the CAR Ts, it's a perfect example. Why do you need five people in a clean room for a CAR T? Just doesn't make sense.
You shouldn't. No.
I mean, and engineering wise, I mean, what you want is a system to be very adaptable to different quantities, such as your system is. We want it to be, you know, very easy, trivial even to use. And I mean, somebody could walk past an OE and just look at it and be able to activate it, right? And you just want it to be a very simple thing, like making a cup of coffee. And and I think, I mean, you've done a great job in just making it a very simple to use system, which is so important because that's where you get errors and that's where you get cost and that's where you have problems. And for us, I mean, the OE system, it was born for an OPU, right?
It was. Right? We brought our teams together and our heads together. Yeah. Like, this is a perfect, it's a perfect match.
It fits in there so nicely. And, and there's a lot of technology developments. I mean, we work with other companies. Give you an example for the QC automation, Excellix, right? They're a wonderful company. Mm-hmm. So many clever solutions. So, and... You know, sometimes I hear, oh, well, you're working this. So we work with many, many technology companies. And unfortunately, there's so many patients out there that nobody's going to lack a job. Nobody. There's so much need, right? And there's so many different kinds of therapies. So I think the future of this technology in this space is, first of all, to be used and quickly. And it will improve just naturally, okay? Because once you have many people using it, it will be obvious. Okay, now we need to add this. Now this needs to connect to this. Now we're going to take this data. Oh, I would really love to know how I could do also this therapy in this system. So the wonderful thing, I think, about the stage we're at today is that it's ready. It can go to clinic. You can use it. And and all the rest... like any other industry, will naturally occur, right? It'll just improve and develop, and the therapies are changing, right? Suddenly you have low-dose CAR Ts. Okay, is our system adapted enough? Can we utilize it? Maybe we can make a small little OI. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can make a little mini one and not put 4 or 8 of these in an ampule. Maybe we can put 40. Right? That's exactly. Not so far away. I would say that I think in the next few years, we're going to see a lot of these changes and we're going to use different materials to reprogram, right? So we want systems like OE system, very flexible, very easy to use for different situations, very adaptable to the environment. And the clever little systems, aren't they? They learn. They can collect data. They can pull it in. You can learn a lot about the cells and how to improve the process.
Yes, 100%. I think, you know, as Orgenesis was our very first Lightspeed early access partner, which has been a fantastic collaboration. And one thing that we are talking even more about now, you just touched on, which is the importance of digital, the ability to be cloud native, to be able to kind of connect all of those nodes in the network together or virtually together so that we can, you know, one of the most frustrating things about the industry in its current state is you see over and over people reinventing the wheel, learning the same lessons over again and spending millions of dollars to do so and wasting time. I mean, ultimately your passion and mission is in perfect alignment with ours, which is we want to enable widespread patient access to these therapies. We have cures for cancer and rare disease that patients can't get access to. And that is not okay. Right. That is a problem that we have to solve and we have to solve it fast.
Yes.
And this ability to learn more quickly, to take all of those disparate pieces of data, turn them into information for therapy developers like your team or others that we partner with is so important. And I wonder kind of your view on the importance of digital. I mean, I think you no doubt know Stephen Ward from the Cell and Gene Therapy Catapult here in the UK. He's got this awful slide where he shows the kind of the need for qualified persons, you know, QPs to release products. And it goes exponential very quickly. And you know, there's just not enough people in the world to do the job. And you say, you're already pulling your hair out.
Yeah.
As one use case that digital has to be able to solve, because otherwise we're just creating another bottleneck, which is, you know, very slow batch release processes on paper. So internally we say paper is the enemy of scale. It's one of the things we're trying to really get our head around is digital is critical to getting these products to patients quickly. I wonder what your and Orgenesis's view around digital and how you're kind of applying that to your thinking today in your work.
It's like, remember they used to use these little things on, how did they call them? The calculator machines was the
Oh, the abacus. You mean that thing?
Yeah, when you would kind of math or little bit, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Uh-huh. That for me is non-digitalized cell and gene therapy. Okay.
That's where we are. Yeah.
Okay. That's kind of what I think of it. What are you doing? Mm. What now we're gonna, I mean, obviously you need to digitize. Obviously you need to, it's, I mean, that's essentially what we're living in. We don't do
everything else is digital.
So
why shouldn't this?
This not, and it's so data heavy. I mean, so obviously. Now, how do we do that? That's, you know, when I was talking about setting up hubs, point of care centers, everybody was kind of, what? You don't have automation. You don't have data systems. You don't have this. You can't do that. And I said, well, the nice thing is I don't have to do everything. I just have to make sure that everyone who's doing it has a chance to connect. And
right. Yeah, put all the right pieces together.
Exactly. And you've seen this. I mean, you came along. Other technology providers, there's wonderful companies out there providing different digital EQMS. EQMS is the lack today of companies providing an electronic QMS system, the quality system. No. So what I'm saying is it's obvious almost, right? Mm. And do we need to do everything at the same time? Do we need to automate everything? Do we need to digitalize everything? No, we can take what there is. And as I said, the gaps will fill in naturally.
Yes.
Just put in just the basic kind of skeleton. Everything will grow around it.
Hmm. No, I agree. And I think it's, I'm going to bring you to my next presentation because you're much more articulate about this than I am. But I feel like the
I can be Jason's assistant.
You can just
I can
pound
like
the table
logician
for me because you get it. And it's very it's very frustrating when we have this conversation sometimes. And people are like, no, we have to start, you know, and it's this conflict between biology and engineering. It's sort of these things have to work together in concert. They can't be one doesn't have to. It doesn't make sense to give one priority over the other.
Yeah.
And developing a process that we know can't reach scale or will never be cost effective to allow these products to be available is it's counterproductive. So why don't we address these issues early in the process? Let's think about CMC. Let's think about manufacturing. Let's think about digital from day one. And if we do it from day one, then we front run the issue. Then we don't put a giant chasm in front of us that we're going to drive off of that we know is there. But I think, you know, a lot of people want to pound it into the long grass. Well, we want to worry about the cells now and we'll worry about the engineering later. We're like, well, yeah, actually, that's how we got ourselves in this mess. So it's refreshing to hear your perspective of it's fundamental. I agree. And it's obvious because the only way we're really going to get to scale, you know, QP batch release is one of the elements that digital has to help, but there's so many others that, you know, you can't have operators standing in an ampoule on, you know, 12 inches high of paper batch records, and that's just not going to work.
And you know, why would you want that?
No.
What reason in the world would you even want to do anything like that? Right?
No.
Look, it's the thing is, we kind of live this day by day. Okay, I've been in with this Orgenesis. I mean, you know, I always tell people this started as a hobby and became my obsession. And it has. I mean, and the reason is because as the years go by, as more biological development occurs, as we know more and more about cells, about how we reprogram them, It is obvious to anyone in the healthcare industry that's looked and met and seen the efficiency of these products that this is the future of curing diseases that today we can't cure, right? We know things are changing. We know biology is extremely important. We've all noticed this with the latest pandemic, right?
We've become acutely aware of it if we weren't before.
Yes, yes. And we have, I think, a social responsibility. And for me, it's really, that's how I see it. I want this world to be a place where anyone that needs any type of cell and gene therapy can easily go to his local doctor clinic, and he doesn't have to be healthy enough so the company who's selling the product knows it can get reimbursed, and he doesn't have to be connected to someone who knows the guys at MD Anderson so he can get him into a clinical trial, and he doesn't have to have only, this type of insurance. It just
Yes.
needs to be.
Quality of access. Yeah. 100%.
And that's it.
100%.
That's the world we want, right?
What a fantastic ambition. I love that. And I think I wonder, when you think about the bringing together of these pieces, and I wonder if you might say I'm crazy. I see a future where we have the ability to not only tailor the environment and maybe location of the manufacturing to deliver this vision, but even to tailor the process to the needs of an individual patient cells. So we have the ability to use those data we were talking about to adapt the process to, when we've seen cells behave in a different way, 10 times and then 100 times and 1,000 times, we have the ability to do in-process controls to actually adapt the process around the cells to get to the same outcome. Because ultimately, that's what the regulator wants. They want to say, is the outcome the same every time? And is it safe and effective for the patient? That's what they care about. And in today's world, we say, well, actually, if you put the same input into the process, you do the same thing every time, then you get the same output every time. That's a well-controlled process. In cell and gene therapy, that's very difficult because we're putting a variable input in and trying to do the same thing to it. And lo and behold, we get a variable output. So this idea of being able to use those data and the system, machine learning algorithms to adapt the process around the needs of an individual patient's cells so that you get that same outcome every time for that patient. And you don't get high failure rates. You don't get some products that work and some products that don't. How far away is that vision? Is that a crazy vision? Or do you
No,
think
no,
that's.
no. Even today, look, and I think you can talk about adaptability to the patients or to the therapeutic indication in many levels, okay? And by the way, that's what algorithms do. That's why we're thinking about this as a software industry, right?
That's
An
right. They're adaptive
information
by
base.
nature.
You want to constantly, make your information work for you.
Yes.
So you can have it at the level of just, as you say, process controls, right? The process controls measuring, okay, now I need more product. You can even adapt it to specific patient parameters, right? But I think you also have another level of adaptability. And I was seeing just in some of the researchers I was meeting, the vectors themselves, the viruses you use to reprogram, they already have algorithmic capabilities. They already have like a logic switch, if or. And
Yeah.
if you think of biology, that's how biology works, right? A cell has control systems, it's got feedback loops, that's how you should work with biology. Biology is not, okay, that's it. You do it once and you do it all the time the same. The beauty of working with cells is actually taking into consideration the fact that that's what they do. They adapt very quickly to situation. I mean, us humans, we think we're very clever, but go find me a control system that works as quickly as a cell does, right? How quickly do we react to something? I mean, nothing we build reacts as quickly as
No.
biology does. That's one of the amazing things about working with cells. So we have to utilize that capability. And in order to utilize it, we have to measure it. We have to have data coming out of the process. We have to be able to talk to the cells, right? And I always say that's what we do. We have a conversation. We are learning the language of the cells. And that's our programming language. And when and as we become kind of more fluent, we have a capability to have a more in-depth conversation, right? We can ask our wonderful little cells, well, maybe you might want to consider this or that.
Yeah. Right now that innate adaptability is working against us because we're trying to kind of force the square peg into the round hole. But
exactly.
I think your point is how do we use it as an advantage and, yep. and adapt our processes around them, knowing that that's what they're built for.
Exactly.
They're built to adapt. It's up to us to work together to make this happen. And,
yes.
And so thank you so much again for spending an hour with us and hope to see you in three dimensions at some point.
Yeah.
Two dimensions is good, but three
we
is
keep
better.
Missing
it, so, we do. You were here, I was somewhere else, and then we're ships passing in the night, but we'll get there eventually. Travel safe for the rest of your journey, and thanks again, and look forward to seeing you soon. Thank you for listening to the Ori Spotlight Podcast. To keep up with the latest in cell and gene therapy and follow us on our mission to manufacture brighter futures for patients, head to the show notes to follow us on social media or visit us at oribiotech.com.